Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saved calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you seen Yan up strong, you mob? Now jump straight in it. We're going to talk to beautiful Michaela French from Murra Law. And the topic here, Torres Strait Islander tradition is now the law. So this is great news for all our brothers and sisters, all my mob there at Torres Straits, in regard to the law. And we had a beautiful conversation with Michaela about this topic, which was a bill, and now it's an act. So I'll bring Kayla into the conversation. Kayla, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trev. Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here today to talk about this important topic.
Yes, and look, it's great news for our mob in Torres Straits. So give us a bit of intro in regard to the topic there, please, sister.
No worries. So the Torres Strait Islander Traditional Law, L-O-R-E, has been recognised as law, L-A-W, after the Torres Strait Islander Traditional Child Rearing Practices Act for 2020 was passed in Queensland Parliament last week.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so a big achievement. So this act is historic for many reasons, but it means that traditional adoption and child rearing practices, which have been practised for many generations, is now recognised by the Australian legal system.
So what is the purpose of the act?
So the act aims to provide recognition of island custom, adoption and child rearing practices to ensure that a child who has been raised in accordance with that practice will benefit by having their legal identity reflect their cultural identity. It's also important to note that the act also recognises the transfer of parentage from the birth parents to the cultural parents and establishes a legal framework to recognise child rearing practices.
Oh, fantastic. So why is the act significant as such?
Yeah, so previously children who were culturally adopted could only take the name of their birth parents as the family or kinship relationships were not recognised by the Australian legal system.
Mm.
So to recognise that cultural adoption, cultural parents were required to go to the family court or the federal circuit court to obtain a parenting order to recognise the traditional adoption and child rearing practice. So the act is significant because it allows Torres Strait Islander cultural parents to now have the same legal rights as other parents and be able to make parental decisions for their child and also obtain new birth certificates. It's also important to note as well, the act addresses the issues about providing important documents and allows easy access to government services such as, you know, financial support, school enrolments and health services as well.
Fantastic. So what is the legal process to recognise Torres Strait Islander adoptions and child rearing practices?
So the Act has made it possible... The Act has made it accessible and affordable for cultural parents to make an application to receive a cultural recognition order to have the traditional adoption and child rearing practice recognised. So there can be two types of applications that can be made. The first is a joint application by the birth parents and the cultural parents for the child. And the second application is can be made by an adult who has grown up with cultural parents under the traditional child rearing practice.
So who makes the decision to approve cultural recognition order?
So a appropriately qualified Torres Strait Islander person will be appointed as the commissioner to make the decisions and grant a cultural recognition order. So in order to do that, the commissioner needs to ensure that consent has been given by the birth parents so that there's a verbal agreement between the birth parents and the cultural parents.
Mm-hmm.
They also need to make sure that the cultural parents are suitable to raise the child and that the adoption and child rearing practice is in the best interests of the child. So when the commissioner makes their decision, they can either decide to grant a cultural recognition order, and that means that they'll be able to have a new birth certificate, or if it's denied, then the application can then be referred to a minister for their review.
Okay, so will the Act need to be reviewed to ensure it is assisting Torres Strait Islander families?
Yes, yeah, so there is a two-year review period that will be conducted after the bill has after the Act has commenced, and that review will look at how well the legal framework is working for Torres Strait Islander families, whether the Act is delivering accessible outcomes, and identify if any issues or changes need to be made.
Look, this has always been the tradition for Torres Strait Islanders, forever and a day. I know families who have passed on, and usually the eldest child, the first child and the eldest child, is given to a sister of the family or a brother. That's virtually, they've always done that, you know. And there were some, questions by the law, LAW, in regard to their process. But here it is now. The bill was in and it has been passed. Now it's an act.
Yes, that's right.
So LAW, as you mentioned, L-O-R-E for Torres Strait Islander Tradition. So this is very, very good news.
It is great news, yes.
Fantastic. A beautiful conversation. Thank you very much, Michaela, for sharing. You're with Mara Law. Let the mob know who Mara Law is.
Yeah, so Mara Law is the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm that specialises in commercial and Indigenous land law. So if you need any legal advice or would like some more information about the new Act, you can call Mara Law on 404-13088.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you. Say hello to the girls and guys at Marlborough Law. And we'll talk soon, Michaela.
Thank you, Trev. Bye.
Bye-bye. Two deadly beautiful yarn there with Michaela French from Mara Law in the studio with me here at Bama Bipra for National Talk Black. And that deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. And that deadly beautiful topic was Torres Strait Islander Tradition is now the law. So in regard to the Torres Strait Islander Traditional Law, LRE, has been recognised as law after Torres Strait Islander Tradition Child Rearing Practices Act 2020 was passed in Queensland Parliament last week. So great news for all our mob in the Torres Straits, and that's how we've always done it, and that's the way it should be. Fantastic. Have you say Yana Strong, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black, Yana with the ball, you and Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM, Bama Bipra Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call, let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
Justice will be done. This world is made for everyone. This world is made for everything to live and be free. We shall overcome. No one on earth should have to suffer pain, lose their home, their life to someone else's gain. Justice will be done. Thank you. justice will be done. Justice will be done. Justice will be done.
Hey, what did on your mob? It's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Mark Aran.
National Talk Black. 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yes, the world we live in at the moment, COVID-19, turned our world upside down in more ways than one. We're going to have a chat now with Professor Carol Hodgson, Deputy Director, Australian and New Zealand Intensive Care Research Centre and Senior ICU Physiotherapist, the Alfred Hospital, and talk about the role of physios in the treatment of COVID-19. We have Carol on the line. Carol, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So just to enlighten us all regarding physios and their important role, we're working with patients, but especially with treatment of patients with COVID-19, their role has stepped up, have they not, in this regard? Yes?
Yes, that's absolutely right, Trevor. The physios around Australia have been very busy managing patients with COVID-19. Whether they've been admitted to hospital, admitted to intensive care, or in fact whether we've seen them by telehealth, The physios have played a really important role, yes.
So just to explain the actual role that they do play in helping a patient with COVID-19.
Yeah, sure. So if a patient is admitted to intensive care, they're critically ill, they're often hooked up to either high-flow oxygen or life support, mechanical ventilation, or even extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, which is where the blood is taken outside of the body, put through an oxygenator, and then pumped back into the body. The physios have had a really key role in intensive care in positioning patients to maximise the oxygen that flows through the blood. So this is often involved them being either in charge, leading the turning teams or the positioning teams. So, for example, if a patient's on a ventilator, they often get their best oxygen levels when they're lying on their stomach, not lying on their back. But to position a patient onto their stomach when they're on a mechanical ventilator, you can imagine it's really difficult. There's a lot of equipment and machinery in the way. We have to position the breathing tube very carefully. We have to make sure that nothing gets disconnected. And
we're also talking about a patient that's got the virus, so we need to protect them in that sense as well, yes?
Exactly. So everybody's in full PPE, and that means gowns, gloves, masks, face shields, head caps on occasion, and everybody has to file into the room one at a time. And it takes about 9 people in the room to turn a patient onto their stomach. Or even with ECMO, if we have a patient on ECMO, to turn them onto their side, it still takes about 5 people. So it can take an hour to turn one person with COVID-19 to put them in the best position to maximise the oxygen for them.
So having the physios in the room or to be at the table or by the bedside, there's communication, of course, with the GP, the general practitioner, the doctor at hand, and they understand the role. And so there's good communication and understanding for this to happen,
absolutely. Yes? Yeah, absolutely. So team communication is really crucial, and it's not just with the medical staff. So the intensive care specialist, of course, is a crucial member of the team. They usually help with the turns as well. We always make sure we have at least one senior doctor in the room. But there's usually a couple of physios and also some very good nursing staff. And the nursing staff we've always got in intensive care in Australia, there's always one nursing staff member at the bedside at all times.
Yes.
So that's great, but we'll bring in additional nursing staff or additional ward support people to help with the turn as well. So as I say, you know, when you need 9 people, that's a lot of people to get in a room at one time for up to an hour.
So, sure, and you know, just on one really patient.
Correct, for one patient. And certainly where I am at the Elford, we've been managing about 8 patients at a time. And you can imagine that means that the turning team is literally working all day just getting patients turned and then rolling them back again at the end of the day.
Exactly. Now, for the patient, and thinking of those who have passed on, and condolences to the families, but if a patient has survived COVID-19, are they in need of a physio thereafter?
Absolutely. So we've had a really important role in rehabilitation.
Yes.
So we actually start early rehabilitation as soon as possible. So that usually starts in the intensive care unit for the critically ill patients, where we start as soon as they're awake and they're able to participate. We get them up and moving, sitting over the edge of the bed, standing, even marching on the spot. Of course, we can't take them out of their room, but we try and do whatever we can inside the room with weights and exercises. When they progress to the ward, we really try and build up their functional capacity as best as possible, because really what we want is these patients to get home as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Once they're discharged home, we also make sure that we do ongoing rehabilitation by telehealth.
Good.
So we have physios who have been ringing the patients, and we've had video links so that we can see their progress and we can offer them advice and give them a training program and really try and make sure that they're back to functioning as quickly as possible.
Well, I'm no doctor, but I worked in gym, so to speak, and I heard that the muscles have a brain. A memory, so to speak. So if you're exercising the body after COVID-19, that's massaging the muscle brain, so to speak, yes?
That's absolutely right. Muscles do have memory, and it's really important that we try not to let our patients, you know, we know that particularly patients who are critically ill, they get weak really quickly. You lose your about 20% of your muscle mass in the first week. So we really try and make sure that we exercise our patients as quickly as we can so that we minimise any loss of muscle mass and increase, as you say, that muscle memory. And the other thing I'd say is that there's a really strong link between physical health and psychological health.
Yes.
So
if psychologists,
get people up and moving,
yes.
Yeah, hopefully that means that they're in a better frame of mind to recover as well.
Yeah. Look, you've just painted the picture. Thank you so very much. Hats off to all physios. They are at the table in regarding treatment for COVID-19 patients. It is a team effort, and like I said, hence the phrase they've been using, we are all in this together, are we not?
That's exactly right. We are all in this together.
Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you, Professor Carroll. You take care, stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Adelie Yan there with Professor Carol Hodgson. She's Deputy Director, Australian and New Zealand Intensive Care Research Centre, Department of Epidemiology and Preventive Medicine, Monash University, Senior ICU Physiotherapist, the Alfred Hospital, and talking about the role of physios in the treatment of COVID-19. And there could be 9 physios at one time in the room, or one physio with 8 nurses, so to speak, in regarding treatment of a COVID-19 patient. So very important roles, and hats off to all our frontline workers, doctors, nurses, physios, psychologists, all the above, doing a fantastic job, and also for all the carers as well out there looking after elders and also beautiful people with disability. Have your say, your mob, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the ball around Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Time for you to have your say, 1-800-422-416.
If you took me now to be your man, I promise I'll be the best that I can. I'll give it my best to play the part. So baby, let's make a start. So jump on me, come for a ride. Star. just to wait and see. I'll give it my best.
Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, working into the future, here we are, COVID-19, and it's turned the world upside down, but we've still got Mother Earth to look after and the people to look after, as well as how we live in the future. We're talking to Dr. Travis Moore. He's the senior lecturer in the Sustainable Building Innovation Lab in the School of Property, Construction and Project Management at RMIT University. And talking about the future and how we are heading into the future regarding housing. On the line, Dr. Travis, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we are talking about walking into the future, but living in the future as well. So when we talk about housing, the topic is sustainable housing, reducing energy costs, renewable energy with government support. So can you enlighten us, please, in regarding our future and how we're looking and how we should be living?
Sure. So, unfortunately, we've got a history of designing and building fairly poor quality and performing housing. in Australia, and that's not just housing that takes a lot of energy to heat and cool and keep comfortable, but also housing that's negatively impacting on our health and well-being, and also impacting on our environment through the resources that go into the construction of our housing, as well as the large amounts of energy that we're consuming within our housing. But we do know that there are things we can do to make some significant differences and improve the efficiency and performance of our housing, to reduce our operating costs, to improve our health and well-being within our housing, and I think most importantly, reduce that impact on the environment.
So we're talking about changing of building houses, but also adding to the conversation, comfortability for people as well as affordability can be done, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a big shift that we've started to see in recent years, is to kind of broaden the discussion around sustainable housing, both for new and existing housing, to go from just being about protecting the environment to actually being good for the occupants inside those buildings as well.
So we're talking about reducing energy consumption for heating and cooling. That comes to the table as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we, across Australia, across the different climate zones, tend to use most of our energy within our housing for heating and cooling, and so there has been a large focus on trying to find improved ways to improve the performance of the building so we don't need as much heating and cooling, but also to think about the technologies that we're using to be more efficient as well.
So heading down this pathway, there could be new industries coming to the table and old industries disappearing. Would that be the case, fair to say?
Yeah, so I think there's probably a little bit of a mix there, where we're going to start to see some more innovations and some opportunities for different parts of the industry to step in and help us deliver more sustainable housing, and to do so with locally made technologies as well. I think that's really important. But also, I think what we need to do is to reflect back on some of the previous ways that we used to design housing, and start to bring in some of those design things that have fallen out of the kind of standard housing design. So things like making sure there's eaves on housing can be something that's really simple to do and really make a difference to housing performance.
Something so fundamental but really effective, yes?
Yeah, and you know, it's not a high cost thing to add on. It's not an additional technology. It's something that we used to do, and because we've been trying to, you know, make our housing bigger and go from fence to fence, in Australia, we've struggled to maintain some of those good design, low-cost elements within our housing.
And Dr. Trivis, as a senior lecturer at RMIT University and studying in this area, where do you go with this information? Do you take it to housing building departments of the parliament and make that conversation? And is it a robust conversation? People would be able to come to the table and add to turn this into fruition, so to speak?
Yeah, so we're having some really interesting discussions with various policymakers at different state government levels, as well as the federal government at the moment. And in particular, in 2022, they're likely to announce some revised changes to minimum building performance requirements in Australia. So we're trying to feed our evidence into that discussion. But we're also trying to educate consumers as well. So if we can educate people who are looking for housing about the choices that they're making or the things that they should be looking
for. It forms a demand, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you get that two-pronged approach where hopefully the regulations will shift and that'll take industry along, but we're also getting consumers who start to demand improved housing.
I suppose that gives a different spin on the so-called phrase we've been using, we are all in this together.
Yeah, exactly right.
Fantastic. Look, a very important conversation. And like I said, we are going in the future, not only thinking of the here and now, but it's also looking after our children and their children into the future, and Mother Earth as well, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if we look forward to the kind of zero carbon kind of goals that many countries are now setting for, you know, between 20 and 40 and 2050, you know, housing is a large part of that. So both for new and existing housing, we're going to need to make significant improvements. Fantastic. There in relation to that.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love where you're going with it. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you and your team and your family. Stay safe and we'll yarn soon, Doctor.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there with Dr. Travis Moore. His name is senior lecturer in the Sustainable Building Innovation Lab in the School or Property Construction and Project Management at RMIT University. And his research explores sustainable housing from a material and technical perspective and the implications on and for households and policy making in regard to our future and how we will be living and looking after Mother Earth as well in regarding the heating and cooling in houses and the energy, reducing the energy consumption. So that's what it's all about, and by doing that, it can help Mother Earth breathe a lot easier and also make it affordable and comfortable for the consumers. We as consumers buying those beautiful houses into the future. Change is inevitable is what it's all about, and you've got to change with the times or get left behind. Change is the engine of growth. A lot of people don't like changes, but change is around. We do live in the 21st century, do we not? Have you say your mob, Yana Strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Yana with the ball, you're on Trevor Tim, 20 Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bunbury Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
When I was a little bitty baby, my mama would rock me in the cradle, in the mold. In them old cotton fields back home. Oh, when them cotton balls get a rock, you can't pick very much cotton. In them old cotton fields back home. It was down in Louisiana, just about a mile from Texarkana. In them old cotton fields back home.
Folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Strap on. Yeah, too deadly. Drive it like you stole it. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yana, with yours truly, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM, Bunbury Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, for your daily program, National Talk Black. We've got Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony, good morning.
Morning, Trevor, radio brother.
How you going?
Yeah, I've just come back down from a little trip up Garrigan, up the mountain there a little bit, overlooking the cane fields back home here.
Beautiful drive. Yeah.
Oh, I just drove. You only woke up a little bit. I got there too late in the day, and it's hot. And but I'm just testing my camera and Telstra reset it, and I'm bewildered by it. But I'm trying. I'm making this movie walk on. So why I called up? Really, I want to talk about the flag. I set up really late last night, as usual, and listening to the ABC, and they had a debate on the Aboriginal flag.
Mm-hmm. What's your thought?
Well, my thought. I wanted to come on and talk about it anyway. In technically a war and a land war, you see movies and the troops the old time, they get along and they carry one flag and the other mob's got their flag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And so the idea is to knock the flag out of one and put up the flag of the other, right?
Yes.
Can you see where I'm relating to this? I'll go deeper into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't like the idea that the Australian government gets in control of the Aboriginal flag, because that's modern-day politics of stealth, of war, is to one way or another knock that flag of resistance or whatever people associate it with. You know, like Canada has a maple leaf, you know, they're still in the Commonwealth. There's still some law.
Yeah. At the moment, the Aboriginal flag, the government has got no control over it. It's owned by a company.
Yeah, but that's protected by white law, right?
Well, exactly. And the the rights to the flag, which was by a First Nation man, he sold the rights to a clothing company.
Yeah, I've reproduced that information and put it on other flyers that have gone out. But I'm just saying, where I've got a couple of... Yeah, it's just symbolic, taking control of that flag, you know. I take one down, flag, put another. I just think that it has to be back into the hands of them. It wasn't designed commercially, but that's how it ended up. I think it's wrong with that all along, that if someone makes a flag for the people... I know it's an art, but it was one piece of art, and there's an enormous controversy. And it's got, what was handed out of the Black Lives Matter march and the powers of Parliament, number 51, legislative powers, the Parliament shall, subject to the Constitution, to have power to make laws for peace and order and good government. Yeah, but it's good government for them, you know. It's not good government for them to say we want the Aboriginal flag, because... they want the Union Jack flying. That's why I'm going to go out this afternoon and take out copyright on it.
Are you really?
No, I tell them, my relations helped make that flag. Made me know, and don't tell anybody. Because,
Pommeland.
When something as symbolic as a flag, and technically, really, a war for land, and don't tell me that's not happening. It's a war by stealth. It's a different war today. It's a different war. And we're all assimilated. You know, you can't even go down the river. I can't. Designing a wanted poster there, you know, and it's going to have on it wanted for bank robbery. Which bank? The River Bank. Yeah, mate, I'm doing
it. They walked in with a balaclava, bow and arrows, and took the river.
Yeah, well, you know, the next yarn, which it gives me reason to do, because I don't know, I can't call these press all the time, and I just try and come in here once a week. I'm filming and documenting the art, and then people get a copy, so if there's ever anything happens to one, you don't keep all your eggs in one basket, you know, I'm spreading it out, the security, and I've got to be really careful with the cameras for copyright and stuff, and so... Yeah, I'm really, really, really into it, and I'm learning this, mate, and I'm getting a bit of help. And but the flag—it's
suiting, you know, for the soul as well. When you have a project like so, and getting to know the tools, it's good for your mind, your heart, your soul, my brother.
I've been up the river there, you know, like for 20 years. Yeah, taking up and learning to walk on all fours, you know, carrying 10,000 bucket, and technology. There was no point in having a phone, because we was out of range. You know, I used to come out on Monday morning and make a call about gold, and stuff. But the flag, it is a war, and a war over that flag. And I just think people should ignore it. And if anybody gets taken to court, well, they all turn up and protest at the court. And that is the true test of the people to support their own flag. Now, you get a flag, and then, in these war films, they get the drummers, the one that make a noise, you know, we're coming. It's all symbolic. This is the art of war. There's an art in everything.
Yeah.
And when this government, who control the copyright laws and the policing, well, they don't really want the Aboriginal flag up, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I've painted little Aboriginal flags on the back of the rocks for years, you know.
Exactly.
So what are they going to do? Sue me for all the ones who've done, you know. And the other way
powerful
is turn
symbol.
The flag upside down. Turn the flag upside down, but then that's giving in to them too. But it is in distress. It's the flag that's in distress. So a good way to have a protest where no one gets hurt is turn that flag upside down. And people will see that flag upside down, and that's a smoke signal.
Yeah, like that's like a different design as such, turn upside down or put another line through it or another colour through it, and then it's a different flag altogether, and then the people can own it, yeah.
Just turn it upside down and then it's a different design.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
See, I'm simple, basically.
Keep it simple, Spunky. That's positive.
Keep it simple.
Exactly.
And if the whole nation turn their flags upside down, well, everybody's having a say in that. Say, oh, look at all this, you know. And then that attracts the platform to go to court to get it dealt with, and then everybody turns up and protects the flag. Because it is the Aboriginal flag of Australia. And, you know...
We want our symbol back. It brings us together. It speaks for us, doesn't it?
Well, you must believe that they haven't taken it from you. That's giving in. This is, you know, you're
a... Well, in a way, it has been taken from us in a business sense. Well, it's turned into business as such.
But it wasn't designed for that.
No, it wasn't. But Mr. Harold Thomas, the brother who designed it, can do with it what he chooses. And he...
Can he copyright it and say, can he get a lawyer?
It's out of his hands now. It's in the Wham clothing, I think it is.
Yeah, but that's wrong. See, it's the Aboriginal flag. It's not made for business. It was, you know, everybody. It's like, there's one more thing I'd like to say, please. Regarding the sign with the creek on the way to Cairns, Blackfella Creek, I wonder if they're going to ban that song yet, Blackfella White.
Yeah, well, the councillor, Mr. Rob Pine, a former member of Cairns, he's put across the nation, all councils should be getting rid of all derogatory names like Blackfella Creek and Chinaman Creek and all the nigger creeks and what have you, yes.
Talking to Murray's here and they're saying, well, you know, we like that sign because that's a sign of us. What, they don't want any sign of Blackfella?
It's like down in... Well, he wants First Nation people at the table to make that decision, either change it or not change it, their call.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people that like that sign because it's symbolic too. We like that sign, Blackfellow.
And some people are anti the sign, you know, because of the name.
This is the whole point, you know, because everybody wants it politically correct. But we've got to be peoplely correct. And I know a lot of people that like that sign, you know, and taking it down is like taking down... That is a statement, you know. If they want, they can turn in here, coming into Gordonville. We're welcome to your dingy bridge or... The worry, the language.
Are you all for that?
Oh, yeah, mate. I've got the language. I know all these language names for all these places here, and I'd love to see a dingy. I'd go down there with a spray can, but I'll get arrested, you know.
Fight the good fight, eh, brother?
but I'm saying these are simple things. There is no sign of hurry or the great rainforest culture when you come into Gordonville, which is what we've wanted all along. Is an industry here, and I'm getting this done, and the family is learning about art, and it will get passed on, and it's not commercial.
Well, the average bricklayer, the average carpenter wouldn't mind what you call the creek, so to speak. You know, they're building their business, pay their bills, feed their family. So if you want to change the name, let's move on.
But, I'm not running things down, but everybody's got to learn. There at the crossroads, and they're digging it all up. They're putting overpasses in, and we live on the new part of town on the top side. The old town's down near by the mill, and there's a Woolies supermarket coming. And now we've got a camping. It was better when it was a rest area, you know. I just leave it. It fills up and. Yeah. he should have more of an understanding. And every time I go there, I get, from his secretary, oh, he can't do nothing. When the camp got over... And he said, what can I do, they're shooting and stuff at Goldsborough and I'm surrounded by cane farmers. He can't be seen supporting Aboriginal things because we're the enemy,
Well, you're using this tool, brother, National Talk Black, and you use it wisely, okay. Brother.
But it's down to that flag. That, people want to turn it upside down.
We've got a different flag. It still represents, doesn't it?
Well, it's just what it is, Yeah. It's a symbol of resistance that there is no treaty in this country. And they can get that flag where they might want to put little white dots in the corner instead of the Union Jack and say, well, there is a new flag. And then you've got the four colours of man, red, yellow, black and white. But that's adulterating the Aboriginal flag. But that could be done too. And then that changes the design. See, this is art and copyright things I've had years to think about to protect the industry.
Good point, brother.
That's a good conversation. Thanks, Trevor. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You too, Tony Gibbs. Thank you, brother.
I get around Cairns and I see the Murray flag everywhere, around the old Channel 10. I see it. It's everywhere. Yeah.
They'll have to pay for it, put it up there, as long as they don't use it business-wise, commercially-wise.
I learned this in the tent, because we were down there one day and the flag was upside down and someone said, it's upside down. I said, no, we're in distress. And for that day, we put it there. this is true, mate. This is the great one. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Good yarn there. Tony Gibbs having his say here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation. Got about 7 minutes left on the program. Your mob here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. We're going across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say. A voice for our people. Utilise it. And a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations around the country, Daily Black Network, and voices for our people. Hear our songs, hear our yarns, and our for and against regarding our existence in this country. We're the first people of this country. 60,000 years, can't argue with that. Yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother, 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. 7 minutes on the program. Squeezing the yarn, you mob. Too deadly. Yedrika, a Lidistic band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. We got someone there. Someone, good morning. Oh, we did have someone. You're gone, brother. Call us back, 1-800-422-416. You know that number. I'll give you that number. You know it. Give me a call. Got him now. Someone, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, brother. Might have to go to the museum upstairs to see a Broncos jersey, brother.
It'll be framed with a wooden spoon right beside it.
Yeah, brother.
First time ever, Broncos wooden spooners.
I want to say thank you to Gavin Cooper, brother, and the Irish board. They've done lots for Queensland, brother.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it all comes to an end, doesn't it?
Yeah, brother. And on languages and names, I spoke about the language. When the 80s, Australia, they were going through a cultural cricket, all those 80 bands. After the America's Cup and Alan Reddy singing I Am Woman, being Alan Moore, of course, they started to get a part in being Australian, brother. But in River Band, their name choice at first was Marvin Vicky, brother. Mm. It was Marvin Vicky. And I watched the performance of the Bee Gees in the US, and Morris Stevens was talking, and while he was talking, he looked to the audience, and he looked at Olivia Newton-John. And he was so proud. He beamed, brother. He lit up. He said, and the song here, I wrote it in Wagga Wagga. They like the fact that, you know, just the name Wagga Wagga, brother. And we could change a lot of the names, brother. But on that, centering it around you, brother.
Mm.
Generally, we're all in this together, brother.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, well-being condition to hand all control over to the government, brother. And that's why I'm thinking. Now, Tony was talking about the flag, and we had Jimmy Maimai, and we had a union, you know, that sort of orange, and all the, even white fellows that protested because of they think there's a human right violation. And I reckon there's going to come a time when you say, now, we're all in this together, because more and more we're handing control over to the government, brother. Thank you very much, brother. That's what it would be. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, my brother. To Delhi, Southern regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Black. If you want to have your say, you have to do that next week. You mob 1-800-422-416. Murray about the sign off here. Thank you very much for your company. You can text 24/7 0457140550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM, for your keyboard warriors. Use that deadly tool. Otherwise, you mob, thank you very much for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and more importantly, stay safe. We are still in the pandemic of COVID-19, so abide by the rules, only medicine we've got at this point in time. Stay safe, you mob, and got news coming up here very soon on National Talk Black. Too deadly.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the day.
New town comes alive as the sun shines on her breast. Well, I'm looking out my window. Is this the town I know best? Street sweepers washing away the dirt from the night before. Hey, boys are going home. They don't want to play no more. Find a bar about 10 a.m. Share a drink with my old friend. Laugh and joke about the night before. Tonight would be the same like the ones before. Getting wasted while our dreams fall to the floor. Face the fear that's in your blood. All of the evil that's inside. Don't try and run the other way. There's no place that you could hide.